Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
It's going fantastic.
Awesome weekend.
It has been. It's temperature's starting to drop again.
Oh, tell me about it. It's not so much the cold as that wind in your face.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When you're having a nice walk at 6 a.m. and you know, and you're walking the dog and, okay, well, it's chilly, but I got my heavy jacket on. And then you turn the corner and you get that breeze right in the face. Oh, I hate that. I hate that. I hate wind.
Yeah.
General rule, I don't think there's a single time in the 12 months of the year that I really enjoy the wind.
What does the dog think of it?
She's never said.
You know what I mean? But so, like, I always wonder, it's like when you get to minus 20, minus 30, you take the dog for a walk. Oh, she heard. Did she hear me barking? Did she hear me say dog or something?
Yeah. Hey, dog.
So it's,
no, she heard you say the W word.
Hey, oh. Anyways, like, you, I always wonder, like, how do dogs, or even chickens for that matter, like, you know, these animals are out there, and, like, she's used to having being in warm, so she doesn't, she's not hardened to the cold.
But she's no, out but there she's walking got the double on, layer and all that sort of stuff.
But the pads of the feet on the frozen ground?
Yeah. It's not like you're walking around on bare feet. And she's always got her bare feet. I've never seen her put on a pair of slippers, shoes, moccasins, boots, nothing.
I think you know what I was getting at. You got booties for her, didn't you?
No.
Didn't get booties?
No. If it gets really, really, really drastically cold, we have
a sweater?
A jacket for her. It's actually a miniature horse jacket.
Oh.
Because our last dog, Hunter, was really big-chested type dog, and we could not get him a dog jacket.
Nothing fit him.
Nothing fit him. So somebody said, go to Green Hawk, which is a horse place.
Yeah.
So you can get bridles, saddles, horse, just that kind of thing, blankets.
Yeah.
And they actually have, you know, the, when you see the horses in the field and they got those
blanket
jacket thingies on?
Yeah.
They have miniature ones they've made for bigger dogs.
Ponies or dogs.
And
or,
we bought one specifically for dogs, but we bought one for Hunter.
Yeah.
And it fit perfect. And it fits Athena perfect as well. So that's the only, yeah, the only time when it gets really drastically, or we need to take her out for a walk and it's snowing or starting to rain.
Yeah.
Doing one of those funny things that it does out there. We put that on. But other than that, no, she just walks naked. Nothing but her fur. And a collar.
Yeah.
Yeah, no booties, no...
Growing up, we had dogs, but they were outdoors dogs.
Yep.
And so, whatever. You know.
But she'll go lay in the backyard in the snow.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, we haven't really had cold weather, though.
Nah, but even still, like, laying in the... Go lay in the snow for a while. Tell me on a hot day out in the snow. It really matter if it's really cold or not.
When I... Like, I had beagles years ago, so... Outdoors, like I was out in British Columbia mostly, but for a short period of time, we were in Halifax, Dartmouth. And in cold weather, the beagles would be standing there and choosing what leg to have hovering in the air, right? They were like, it's like, what, are you dancing?
But our dogs usually do that when they're out after walks and they're starting to get some cracks on their paws
The salt. Starting to hurt, yeah.
When they're starting to walk with too much salt and stuff like that. They do that, but other than that, no, I got good dogs. Hardy Canadian dogs.
Well, she's part husky, right?
Yeah. That's why I say she's got the undercoat.
Mm-hmm.
And in the spring when she starts shedding, you got to keep on top of that. There's a special brush that gets the undercoat.
Oh, yeah?
And it just pulls it out and like you just brush.
Yeah.
And you got like, oh, I think there was another dog in there. So, yeah. No, she's fine with that. Mm-hmm. But we do go to the dog park. The leash-free trails through the woods up there. And you see people, they got these, basically you put their leg in.
Yeah.
And they're like hip waders.
For dogs.
For dogs, like four legs.
Mm-hmm.
And it all wraps up around them. So it looks like they're wearing hip waders on four legs and nothing on top.
Or stockings like a 1980s dancer.
Exactly. Why? Stop dance. It. Your dog's got this big, massive... coat, you know, like more than hard my dog has, and you're putting it in this, making it look like a clown. Is your dog a clown, lady? Is your dog a clown?
Your dog's not a human.
Does that dog look funny to you? Looks funny to me, and that dog's not enjoying it. Yeah. I remember as a kid, we never put clothes on dogs.
I never did. Yeah, we never did either. But we were on a sort of a farm type thing, so.
Yeah.
They were working dogs.
Yeah, no, just if we're going out near the lake and water and stuff like that, and there's going to be water or mud and liquidy that will get into her fur and stuff like that, we tend to put the jacket on. But I think she's worn it once all winter this year. Yeah. Huh. I think she maybe wore it. I think she wore it a couple times last winter when we were winter camping.
Mm-hmm.
Just sort of give her a break from being the cold weather all the time. But no.
Have you opened that box of candy yet?
No. You are fixated. I am never going to open that box of candy. Do you need some candies, Derek?
Well, I see it there every week. It's just sitting there.
Oh, there is candy in it, too.
Well, you're surprised there's candy in it?
Yeah, I didn't think there was. I thought I ate it all. Don't there make too much noise and don't eat it all. These are these licorice all sorts. I love these things. I got a big
they're
tin.
They're awesome.
I got a big tin of them at Christmas, and taking the work usually. No, you're not having any, Athena. Dogs don't eat them. And Derek does. Beer and licorice all sorts. Breakfast, oh champions. All right?
There we go.
There you go. They won't be here next week now that they're opened. On the weekend... Might as well talk something paddling and outdoors related. We've talked about dogs. We've talked about candies.
Hello.
No, Athena's going nuts looking for candy.
She's staring at me.
Right? Hey, pal, what do you got?
Making me feel guilty.
Is that a candy you got there?
Hi.
You got a spare? Are you going to eat all those over there? Oh, yeah.
Go see Daddy.
I love you, Derek.
Go see Daddy.
Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show was on the weekend.
Yes.
You couldn't make it.
No.
They had a lot of people asking where you were, and I said that you had your first job in the porn industry. They all wished you luck. I know I told them you were going to a swingers convention, but, lots of the same vendors as every other year, so, you know, you weren't really missing. If you're going to look for brand new... Yeah, probably about 90% of it was still, 80-90% was still the same.
But there was gutters and windows?
I didn't see the gutter people, but I saw windows and I saw the food people and the pots and pans and the plates and silverware and stuff that you wouldn't be taking outdoors at the Outdoor Adventure Show. But you say people complain, but they got
people might be buying them for their RV.
Yeah. Well, and they had those for sale, but you're not buying those windows for an RV.
No.
When you got extra booths, you can sell them.
Oh, yeah.
So you're not taking a loss. You know, that's what the company's got to do. So, anywho.
I'm chewing another mic here.
They still had some of the destination section. They had a diving section. You know, things not related to paddling, but it's an outdoor adventure show, so it's expected. Yeah, there is, like I say, a lot of the same sort of stuff. Checked out the canoes and kayaks, Novacraft, Swift, H2O, Complete Paddler was there with Novacraft, that sort of thing. Checked out some of the gear, Canadian Outdoor Equipment Company, Recreational Barrel Works, Frontenac Outfitters, Algonquin Outfitters. Never got to talk to Jeff of Jeff's Maps.
Oh, no?
No.
Oh. I saw a picture of him.
Yeah. I saw a picture of him, but, Maps by Jeff.
Yeah.
It's just habit to call it Jess Maps. Maps by Jess. I waved to him once, and through the 50 people around him, he waved back. There was a lot of people there looking at his maps. Watched some of the paddling demos in the demo pool.
Mm-hmm.
So a few things there went on pretty good. And, it's nice to see that people do it in the pool. I wish I had a big pool like that to do it, but... Yep. I'm not a pool person, so. Friends in Temagami, went and checked them out. Alex Mathias was there.
Okay.
Yeah, he came all the way down from Temagami to spend the days there and had some of his books for sale. And, it was nice to see him down there. Cabin Falls Eco Lodge, Andrea and Hap Wilson. So, going through a whole bunch of my stuff lately, I found some old tomogamy maps.
Okay.
Back in the late 80s, early 90s. I picked them up when I first started getting into canoe tripping. And a book, Ottawa River Canoe Routes. And I said, oh, man, there's pictures in these. Well, the book is definitely Hap Wilson, but the maps have illustrations on them that are exactly, you know, they're by Hap Wilson.
Okay, yeah. He drew it. Right?
He's done these maps. And so I took those and laid them out in front of him, and I got a bit of a kick out of that and signed them for me, sort of.
And they would have been from the 80s type thing?
Yeah, yeah. So
so he must have been surprised, like, whoa, whoa,
yeah, what are you still these? Doing around? Yeah, because they're now full color, apparently.
Yeah.
I haven't bought a new one of those in ages. I just buy the Friends of Tomogamy trip planner map and whatnot now. I don't buy the ministry maps anymore. So, yeah, so he was quite tickled to see those things. Then I walked over to see Kevin Callan at his book signing, and I plopped down a book in front of him, which kind of like, are you kidding? Brook Trout and Black Flies.
Okay.
First edition.
Yep.
I picked it up off of eBay a couple years back now. It looks like it has never been read. It is like pristine. The back, like the spine isn't even cracked. Came from Maine. So I think somebody probably bought it on holidays, decided we were going to read it, and just never did.
Exactly, yeah. Something you never get around to.
Yeah, so that one became Canoe Routes of Algonquin, I believe, in their third, fourth, whatever, printing later on. Because the company that was doing these went bankrupt, if I'm not mistaken. And so the new company redid them under, the publisher did them under a new name.
Oh, okay.
So, but yeah, took that, got him to sign that, and it's in a sealed bag and everything. like it was a comic book or something, right? So it takes it out of there. I said, yeah, it's worth about $200. And he signed it. Now it's worth about $5 because you wrote in it. So that was pretty cool to get that thing. You know, there's a few people around looking at that and going, wow, that's an old book. Went to a few of the presentations and stuff like that. Kevin was doing his portage-free canoe routes, which is cool because, you know, not everybody likes to portage, but they want to get out on there. And there are places you can go and, you know, not have to get out every so often. And
I like portages, but not if they're one after the other. Like you hop in a pond and get to the side and unpack everything in. But generally, like, if you're out for a couple hours and you do a portage or two, it's like, it's kind of a break. So you get a break from paddling, then you do the portage, you get a break from the portage by paddling again. It kind of breaks up the day.
You got to find those routes that have the proper amount and proper distances.
Yeah.
Because, if you're spending more time portaging than actually paddling, you might as well just forget the canoe and go on a hike.
The wrong route.
Go back.
Exactly. Yeah.
Checked out the Nahanni River of Dreams presentation.
I wanted to see that. If I had gone, that's what I was going to see.
Yeah. See, I'm tossed up about the Nahanni.
So I've been looking into it more, and so I was trying to figure out how to get the kids on it. So if we and just by talking to them and looking at the stuff online, if you do the upper end of the Nahanni, there's some class 1, 2, 3, not too much. And I'm thinking, how do I get the kids enough experience to paddle it? And then I discovered, hey, I can do a self-planned trip, rent a raft and raft it, which is, we're kind of thinking of now, like next year. We'll
not
just,
doing a guided thing.
No, I don't want to do guided. I want to be able to stop when I want to stop and hike up some areas and check out some sandbars and so on, right?
Well, if you hire a single guide and tell them this is what we're looking at doing.
That could work too, yeah.
Right? Because that way, that's sort of a, he's going to be able to tell you, oh, no, you want to portage this section.
Or, yeah, exactly.
Oh, no, stick over to the right or stick over to the left. Or
That's a possibility too.
It'd go right down the middle and hope. You win.
Yeah. Be a few extra thousand for doing stuff like that, but it could be worth it.
Yeah. So check that out. Saw Planning Your Next Canoe Trip by Algonquin Adventures. They got up there and said, you know, for new people and stuff like that, here's what you can do. Here's what you have to do before you start planning the trip and, you know, finding your destination. Do you want to do a guided trip? Do you want to start with, I mean, that's what he said. He start with, you know, like an overnighter.
Mm-hmm.
Go do your day trips, then start with an overnighter, and then go from there. Build up. And Algonquin Outfitters has all their gear and all that. They'll supply.
So you don't have to buy it right off the bat. They supply everything,
and you get a guided trip as well. They also have one. I can't remember what he called it. Guide for a day or something like that. Basically, they take you in for the first day.
Mm-hmm.
They show you how you go over a portage or two. You get to camp. This is how you set everything up, and then they leave.
And they abandon you.
They abandon you. Hmm. And then now you've got the gist basics, of everything.
You have the basics under your belt, which is for people starting out, not have done it before.
Yep.
If they're only used to car camping, it's like, whoa, this is a lot. How do I figure all this out? There's a lot of stuff to get into your head.
Yeah. I mean, now back when I first started, you did not have that option.
No.
Yeah. Right. And now that they have those options, it's better to take advantage of it if you can.
Yep.
Yeah, get that exactly. education and go, oh, no, this is how you do this. This is how you do this. This is how you do this. So you don't screw something up.
And sometimes if you're heading out there, like you come across stuff that's like, I never even thought this was going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know this was going to be a thing.
Yeah.
So it is, if you're really green, then it would be handy to do that, a guide for the day or something, or a guided trip. Or
And then you go in for like 2 days or something, then come out the next day. And everything's good, right?
Baby steps.
Yep. Then I went and saw Beyond the Beaten Path, Northwest Territories Hidden Paddling Gems, put on by Jack Pine Paddle. Girl Hannah was doing the presentation. When you think Northern Canada paddling trips, you picture in your head, you're in your canoe, all your gear, and your
scrub middle brush, of
nowhere,
no trees.
Some rock, big rock formation, mountains,
yep.
all that sort of stuff. It's always a canoe, though, isn't it?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Jack Pine Paddle offers sea kayaking trips out of Yellowknife on Great Slave Lake.
Interesting. It is a big lake. It makes sense.
Oh, it's a huge lake.
Yeah, so it makes sense.
Yeah. I've never heard, and apparently they're the only ones that do it.
Hmm.
They offer two different trips, the North Arm and the East Arm, multi-day excursions. Now, they put up superimposed a picture of a Canada goose flying over top of Great Slave Lake.
Okay.
So, you know my whole, the Great Lakes, Superior's, the Wolf Head.
Yes.
They do the same thing.
Hmm.
Except with the Canada goose. Apparently, Great Slave Lake is a Canada goose with its wings up.
Yeah.
So they have the East Arm, which is where the head is, facing east. And then the North Arm, which is where the wings are up.
Okay.
Facing north. So they go east, they go west. And they do these multi-day excursions, 8 days, 9 days. Now, anywhere you go up there on these excursions is going to cost you money.
Oh, absolutely. Right?
There's
yeah.
no getting around it. Yeah. So I wasn't even going to get into that because it doesn't matter where you go, you're going to be paying a few thousand dollars at least.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere you go tends to be the same. You got to pay for your flight to wherever, this part being Yellowknife.
Yeah.
So from Toronto, Yellowknife is your business getting there. You pay for your first, any time before the trip, you have to pay for your lodging and your food. And then after, same deal. All the little things that you got to pay for yourself that aren't included in the trip. Doesn't matter who you go with. It's always the same. But yeah, it's in kayaks, not canoes. The East Arm, trip on the East Arm of Great Slave Lake features deep, clear water with abundant islands, narrow channels, tall red cliffs, world-class fishing, pike and lake trout. And some of these lake trout they were catching, huge. Craggy cliffs, rocky islands, islands in the East Arm support bald eagles, terns, and gulls. Breathtaking cliffs are built from rock as old as 2.7 billion years. Oldest in the world, making for some of the most epic campsites you'll ever experience. If fishing is your thing, you'll definitely want to bring a fishing rod to enjoy the seemingly bottomless depths surrounding these islands. They are swarming with trophy-sized lake trout. Because the lake is cold and clean, fish keep near the surface in summer, making for plenty of fishing opportunity from a kayak and from camp. To add an element of magic to these expeditions, you can take advantage of autumn aurora season for our late season departures, early August to end of September. So there's a couple times they tend to go. You'll have to go to the website to find out exactly what fits for you. As you tip your head back in awe to watch the glittering lights dancing across the sky, we'll show you the best of our spectacular aurora. Great Slave Lake lies directly in the magnetic aurora belt, which means it's one of the most reliable places on Earth to spot the northern lights. Alternatively, you can book on an earlier departure date, July to early August, and enjoy the warmer weather as a short but spectacular summer in the north. Now, the one thing they were saying, because it's warmer, the one thing they were saying is on these trips, things like under their lists of things to bring and things that are not given and stuff, dry suit.
Okay, yeah.
So it's Great Slave Lake.
It's going to be cold.
It's going to be cold. So all the trips like this, they require dry suits. If the North has been on your bucket list for ages, the majestic East Arm offers a place like no others. Unspoiled, remote, and iconic. This expedition offers a chance to explore a region home to Canada's newest protective area, the National Park, Thy Dene Nene, or Land of Our Ancestors. Great Slave Lake, located in the southern half of the Northwest Territories, is the 11th largest in the world, and after Great Bear, the biggest entirely within Canada. It measures in at 28,568 square kilometers.
That's huge.
Roughly the same size as Belgium. It's also North America's deepest lake, reaching a maximum depth of 615 meters. Deep enough to cover the CN Tower.
Huh.
So if you happen to have a CN Tower, you need to hide.
That's super deep.
Right? The North Arm. North America's deepest lake is brimming with romance and mystery. See, that's where you need to go. It's especially true when Heaven's Own Light Show begins. Our sea kayak expedition to the North Arm of Great Slave Lake is planned to take advantage of autumn aurora season. As you tip your head back in awe to catch the glittering lights dancing across the sky, we'll show you the best of our spectacular aurora. I think I read that up on the East Arm. North Arm lies directly in the magnetic aurora belt, one of the most reliable places to see the northern lights. If you thought the aurora was only a wintertime phenomenon, think again. At the tail end of the northern summer, the skies begin to darken and the lights burst into view. North Arm of Great Slave Lake, home to thousands of remote... Yeah, it's like the Georgian Bay.
Okay.
The islands.
Tons of islands.
Like, they did a map.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at Great Slave, like, zoom in and look at all the islands on the north side, like the shoreline, wow. It's like the Georgian Bay there with all of the small islands. Home to thousands of remote islands, Feisty Pike offer a remote... and unique paddling adventure for aurora chasers. It's true the sea kayak excursion will put the aurora on display like no other tour. Unlike motorized tour operators who stick to the roads, we are able to paddle deep into remote wilderness far away from any artificial lights, like Yellowknife. Culture, wildlife, and landscape round out the other highlights of this kayak excursion in Canada. You'll have a chance to disconnect from the digital world as you paddle through wide open water vistas. North Arm has powerful historical, spiritual, and cultural significance. It is a home, a place of legends, sharing, teaching, and learning. The numerous channels and bays of the North Arm are important habitat for breeding birds, and each year attract more than 100,000 northbound migrating water birds. You'll find a stunning variety of birds such as bald eagles, gulls, terns, ducks, swans, and geese. It's also home to moose, black bears, bison, wolves, and tons of world-class trophy pike. They really push the fishing.
Yeah.
And I'll see if they got the pike in the North Arm. I'm heading over the East Arm for some of that massive trout. That's what I'm saying.
So what's interesting is, like, so here, there's a lot of pressure on fishing here. You go to Temagami, Killarney, Algonquin, any of the lakes around here, there's a lot of pressure on fishing. Up there, there's not a lot.
No.
So the fish get to be very large size.
Yep.
And so they're plentiful, and it's easy to catch, and so you get yourself some really beautiful fish. So that's an appealing factor for anybody. Well, you were up in Woodlands Caribou.
Yep.
Fishing was great there because there's, again, not a lot of pressure on fishing.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be nice to go.
Well, and Hannah was saying that, like, if you know how here we sit there going, well, I'm going to bring the stuff for a fish dinner just in case.
Hmm.
She said, there is no just in case.
Yeah, you are catching.
You fish. Are catching multiple. Well, actually, there was one gentleman that was sitting in front of us who had been on one of those trips.
Yeah.
And even when he was saying, yeah, they ate. They were catching grayling up. He was a bit interior.
Yeah.
But they were catching grayling. They were catching trout. They were catching pike. They were catching, like. Yeah. And they said there was no worry about not having a fish dinner.
Nice.
Multiple times. From a paddler's perspective, the North Arm is a paradise of unexplored islands of glacier-carved Precambrian rock. It's a wilderness odyssey of narrow channels. Navigate with expedition-grade sea kayaks. The North Arm Great Slave Lake Sea Kayak Adventure is an unforgettable wilderness experience. So if you want more information on tips, pricing, dates, distances, itineraries, costs, etc., 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 jackpinepaddle.com. Go check them out. And, yeah, like I say, like all of a sudden she's showing these things about sea kayak tours. I'm like, wait. I don't think I've ever seen anybody doing sea kayak tours.
Neat, eh?
So I was talking to her afterwards. I went over to the booth and was talking
to her.
There's
no portaging, so it makes it simple.
And she says they're the only ones doing the sea kayak thing. Part of it is like with the canoes, you just leave them out. No big deal. But the kayaks, you really can't do that. The kayaks they're using.
Yeah.
So you have to have some days maintaining them. And if you're leaving them in the backcountry, then somebody's got to keep going.
Yeah.
So it's like, no, they do it right there, and everything's there all the time. They got like water taxis that'll take you.
Yeah.
For one of them, there was one trip she was talking about. It's like a 5-hour water taxi drive to begin with. It's like, yeah, I don't mind doing a half hour, but I don't mind doing 5 hours. So jackpinepaddle.com. I like this because we do have an awful lot of kayakers that listen to our podcast here, and whenever we talk about anything Northwest Territories, Yukon, that sort of stuff, everybody's thinking, oh, you're doing the rivers in canoes and stuff. Well, hey, I got you people covered now, don't I? Go to Yellowknife, Jackpine Paddle.
What's interesting about, so just with what this is, Great Slave Lake and so on, if you look at satellite view of Canada from the Great Lakes up towards Great Slave Lake, there's a band of strip or deeper lakes that go right across, like, well, North America looks like a seahorse. So if you look along the spine of the seahorse, there's all kinds of deep and large lakes on a band that slashes right across Canada and into the U.S. So it's interesting to see that, and it's like, oh, I'm curious. Like, it's, you know, glacier action, yada, yada, yada. But you can see that there's a pattern of large, deep lakes right across the spine of the seahorse.
I'm trying to figure out how North America looks like a seahorse.
Well, here. There you go. See, there's the head. Alaska's the head of seahorse.
Oh, a seahorse with something on his back, some
the
weird
tail.
Growth.
The tail of the seahorse is Mexico, Florida. Like, Mexico. So you can see it. See? Seahorse.
And he's got a backpack on, yeah.
Yeah.
I see.
Touch the screen.
All right. See, once it's pointed out.
Yeah. Once you point it out, it's a seahorse.
North America looks like a seahorse.
Yeah.
Lake Superior looks like a wolf head.
But anyways, if you look along the spine of the seahorse, you can see all these deep, deep, large lakes.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. My kids, they like these videos of geography, science, and they do all kinds of weird stuff like that. So
see, that's what you need to do is have a movie night,
hook
YouTube up to your TV,
yeah,
and watch Nahani videos.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We've been choose your own adventure. Like, we want to do it. We want to get up there.
Yeah. Do it.
Potentially next year.
You know who you should call?
Ooh,
Jack Pine Paddle.
Jack Pine Paddle, yeah.
Ask for Hannah.
Well, no, we're going to do the Nahanni. She doesn't do the
they
Nahanni.
They do.
Oh, they do the Nahanni as well?
Yeah, they do a whole... Yeah, if you go up there... I was only talking about kayaking.
Yeah.
But if you go up there, they do a whole range of other...
Oh, okay.
A lot of other stuff. Mm-hmm. Check them out when you got a couple minutes. The other fella... I managed to get out of the Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show fairly unscathed. Sorry, my wallet
unscathed.
Made it. Sort of. I went and saw Andy at Recreational Barrel Works. Was chatting with him a couple times, but the Hamilton Adventure Expo said I was going to come back and check out one of his packs, specifically the Courier 2-part canoe pack. So basically, it's a Wanigan made out of cloth.
Okay, yeah.
Right? And now, so picture that rectangle pack.
It's a cube. Cube.
Two of them,
mm-hmm.
one on top of the other, and backpack harness so that you can carry them on portages, waist belt, and a tump. So I was looking at those, hemming and hawing, and decided, you know what, I'm going to. Pull the trigger on that this year. Yeah. So I went and saw Andy and said, hey, Pally, buddy, friend. So it's part of the Heritage line of packs, 104 liters, has two rectangular shaped sections, 52 liters each. They connect together by quick release buckles for portaging and then separate again just as fast. So if you're solo or something like that, if you're solo canoeing, you can put one, like with one of the packs, boats yeah. or something, or my Osprey. I usually put a small pack behind me and then my bigger pack up front. Well, you can do the same thing with this. You just take them apart, boom, one at the front, one at the back sort of thing. So it's a great solution for solo paddlers that want to split their load to balance the canoe. Pack includes modular shoulder straps that can be quickly attached when it's time to portage. You can also just take one of them.
Yes.
So you don't always yeah. have to have the two, right? Pack comes with the modular shoulder straps, the add optional tump line, super tump. I got the super tump because it's wider, more comfortable. Hip belt for whatever suits your portaging style the best. Also great as a sled or toboggan bag in the winter.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if you take them apart, you just lay it on there and strap it down.
Yeah.
Right? You got two automatic. Now, I did get the dry bags for the inside because they're not waterproof.
Exactly. So. You'd have to waterproof yeah. somehow.
So I got the two waterproof bags made specifically that fit inside these. So they're rectangle.
They're sized.
Yeah. As well. Updated version of a classic boasts hard-wearing 1,000 denier nylon 2-inch webbing that runs down both sides along the bottom of the pack to secure the load to a tump line. Each section of the pack has quick-release buckles on the lid to close over an expandable drawstring attic to keep your gear contained. Also under the lid are two yellow compression straps. The foam back pad is a welcome nod to comfort. Yeah, so there's thick padding.
Yeah.
So that's against your back as opposed to whatever gear's poking through or whatnot. Three high-vis grab handles on each section, six handles in total. Get this pack in so you can get it in and out of the canoe or around camp. Daisy chain strips along both sides give additional lash points so you can use beaners to clip stuff on and whatnot. Modular shoulder straps are included. Comfy shoulder straps, adjustable sternum strap. Each pack section is generous reticulated foam, 3/4 inch over a layer of dense EVA foam. Six high-vis grab handles, pack sections clipped together, quick-release buckles, expandable top. So, yeah, you can put that as high as you want sort of thing with the stretchy buckles there. 2-inch webbing down both sides along the bottom. So that's if you're using the tump line, everything. You're basically pulling it up from the bottom pack and up. Three quick release compression straps for each lid that comes down the pack. Reinforcement on the handles, shoulder straps, tump line, connection points. A 20-liter or 30-liter barrel will fit inside one section.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So if we put, because right now, because that's what I was saying, like with the two sections, you can use one section for like your kitchen, your food, your stuff that's around.
So stop mixing with
your with bottom your section that has your bedding, and clothing, stuff that goes inside your tent. Because you don't want food smell.
Yeah, you don't want them mixed.
Yeah. So that's what's perfect about that. And then you can throw the one, the bottom one, say, in your tent that has your clothes and all that.
Yeah.
And the other one you can leave outside sort of thing.
Exactly.
I do like these versions because as opposed to a narrow, tall bag, if there's something at the bottom, you're hauling
digging
all the crap out and whatnot. And, you know, digging for whatever is at the very, oh yeah, here's that pen lid at the very bottom of your bag.
The whole stupid bag.
Yeah. So this thing here is easier because it's long, it's laid down. It's like if you had a regular backpack and you could cut along the side. There was a zipper on the side, you could open up and see everything. That's basically what this is.
And these are the only colors they have?
Those are the only colors they have. Acorn, which is a light brown olive color, and ochre, a pictograph red.
Nice looking.
It is, too. Overall volume, 104 liters, 6,336 cubic inches. The attic or cuff adds more storage space if required. Width of each is 56 centimeters, 22 inches. The depth, 30.5 centimeters, 12 inches. Height, 30.5 centimeters or 12 inches. Material, 1,000 denier nylon. Weight, 2 kilograms or 4.4 pounds.
Not a lot.
Nope. So, like I say, I like that you can separate the gear based on your pack color. So, like I say, kitchen gear in one, tent sleeping gear in the other.
And I do that normally anyways, but I do it with, like, you have two canoe packs, right? But this one here, you can combine the both into one pack.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's nice to be able to separate and sort.
I have a smaller barrel that I'll take, and that's our kitchen gear.
Okay, yeah.
Right? So we'll put food in there. We'll put our stove in there. We'll put pots and pans in there. And plus, if you're hanging your food, it's easy to hang a barrel.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? But this way, I can either throw the barrel in there and some more stuff, or I just put the stuff in one of them.
Yeah.
Right? I like the smaller barrel because when I'm portaging, I can throw the small barrel on and take it as opposed to a massive pack and, you know, get it done that way. So I'm looking forward to getting this out on a trip and give it a whirl. It looks like it's going to be good. If you want to see it and check out a video, go to recreationalbarrelworks.com. Look under the Heritage Pack Collection and find the Courier 2 part pack. And there's Kevin Callan, the Happy Camper, there did the video with Andy explaining how it all works out on the bottom of the page there. So check that out and you'll see what it is. All in all, Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show is pretty decent. Again, outdoor adventure show, so there's more to see than just paddling, unfortunately. I'm happy that I made it out there as cheaply as I did. There was a lot of gear that was tempting. Some of it was just luxury items that I know I don't need anyway.
Yeah.
Some I'm not 100% sold on yet, or were just upgrades to gear that I already had. So, awesome. It was a good time. Good time. Did a lot of walking. Oh, you know what I got to use?
What's that?
You know my water bottle?
Clips.
Yes. I put that on my backpack that I wore around.
Right on.
Rather than carrying bags and stuff, I just throw everything into a backpack that I collect along the way. And, it was hanging right off the front. I got a few comments on it.
Yeah.
Well, that's a pretty cool.
Yeah.
Where'd you get that? Japan. Damn it. Guess you're going to Japan, pal.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a pretty good weekend there.
Excellent.
It's flying by here. I got a couple other things to talk about. There is something I will tell you about paddling at night.
It is different. I do enjoy it. It is kind of risky, I guess, depending on how far you're going. But I've done it on a few trips where we went to like 11, 12 o'clock at night. A lot of ground to cover, right?
That, and, I mean, we did the Brent Run, so that was all night.
Harder to find portages at night.
It is. we've also gone out there, do some night fishing. We've gone out there and just laid there in the canoe watching the stars and stuff that. Yeah. So, but there's something to be on, to be said to, about being on a nice, calm lake pitch darkness under the full starry sky. Just be smart about it. Don't be an idiot
if
you're going to do it. But I suggest people do that. Victoria Lake Canoe Club in South Africa hosted a successful 12-kilometer night race in Gauteng. For many participants, the race was not only about competition, but also about fitness and recreation. It began at 5:30 p.m. with pleasant weather conditions attracting 70 paddlers from across Gauteng. The event provided an important training opportunity for paddlers preparing for the Ducey River race. Key focus on the race included portage practice, an essential skill in canoeing. Having good portage technique is especially important if river races where paddlers must navigate around unsafe sections. Practicing portages improves agility, strength, and overall race readiness. There was K2 and stuff like that. They came in pretty close, 21 seconds apart. 55. Now, it says 55:08.
What was the date of this race?
The beginning, near the middle of February.
Okay.
Yeah, so only like a week or so ago. It had to be 55 minutes because it's only 12 kilometers. 55.08 minutes. Second place was just 21 seconds later.
That's tight.
I think in 55 hours. Wait, 12 kilometers.
Yeah, it's a short race.
Yeah, maybe they took the scenic route. the success of the event highlighted the growing enthusiasm for canoeing in the region, while reinforcing Victoria Lake Canoe Club's role in promoting fitness, competitive development, and community participation in paddle sports. Good for them.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Yeah, the Ducey River race is huge. And that, I think that's this weekend, if I'm not mistaken.
And this was the night race.
Yeah, this one's the night race, yeah.
70 people went.
Gotta like that.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Speaking of races, Peterborough.
Oh, yes.
Less than an hour from our house.
Yeah.
Dragon boating.
Big festival.
Peterborough's Dragon Boat Festival will celebrate a quarter century of paddling for cancer care this summer, marking 25 years as one of the region's signature fundraising events. 25th Anniversary Festival takes place Saturday, June 13th at Del Crary Park. Once again featuring dragon boat races on Little Lake alongside artisan and food vendors, family fun zone, a beer garden, and more. Registration for teams is open as of February 25th at ptbodragonboat.ca.
I might just go check this out. I'm not going to race in it, but I think it would be a fun day with the
That's what I was thinking. I think I might go up there and just take a peek at it. Organizers say the milestone anniversary will be reflected not only in celebrations, but in the event's fundraising goals. This year's target, $325,018.01.
And 1 cent?
Yep. For the Peterborough Regional Health Center Foundation, a 25% increase over last year. Because it's the 25th year.
Yeah.
They took last year and just added 25%. So that's what they ended up with, that number.
Mm-hmm.
Festival chair Michelle Thornton explained the goal specific fear carries symbolic meaning, including that the 2 in 5 Canadians will be diagnosed with cancer in their lifetime, 1 in 8 women will face breast cancer diagnosis, and 0.01% of men will also be diagnosed with breast cancer.
Oh yeah.
I've actually heard that before. Most importantly, what's raised here stays here, Thornton says, noting the funds support cancer care close to home. We all know someone who has been affected by cancer, and by paddling together, we can make a lasting impact on the lives of family, friends, and neighbors in our region. Hosted by Survivors Abreast Dragon Boat Team, Peterborough's Dragon Boat Festival was first launched June 2001 as Liberty Mutual's Day on the Water. becoming Peterborough's Dragon Boat Festival the following year, so since 2002. Since then, the festival has become a favorite community event to kick off summer season and has raised more than $4.9 million
dollars
for breast and other cancer screening, diagnosis, and treatment at Peterborough Regional Health Center. That is huge.
Yeah.
Last year alone, the festival raised a record-breaking $400,104.01. There's something about that 1 cent, buddy.
I know.
It's going to keep coming back like a cursed penny, as it were. Survivors of Breast President Janice James said the team, founded in 1999, has always focused on breast cancer awareness and raising funds for the PRHC Foundation. We know firsthand the importance of the work that the foundation does in their continuing mission to bring the breast cancer care the world has to offer right here to our hospital. Leslie Hayway, president of CEO of PRHC Foundation, called the 25-year milestone an absolutely remarkable testament to what a community can achieve when we all come together for a cause that touches so many lives. I think it's hard to know anybody that's not.
Oh, it's tough. Yeah. Everybody knows.
Yeah. Somebody. Yeah. As all funds raised by paddlers and donors are donated to the PRHC Foundation, the festival relies on sponsors to cover expenses in creating the best experience possible for participants. That includes Kawartha Financial Services, which is marking its 25th consecutive year as the event's presenting platinum sponsor. This milestone reflects a shared legacy of compassion, community spirit, and support for local health care, and we are proud to continue standing alongside many teams, volunteers, and partners who make this event such an enduring force for good. Organizers say plans are already underway to commemorate the 25th anniversary on Festival Day as Peterborough once again gathers on the shores of Little Lake to paddle in support of cancer care across the region. Breast cancer and dragon boating. I don't know what the connection or why the connection has become, because there's a lot of dragon boat teams. Like there was the
correct
one.
Thanks, because it's UConn group competition, UConn 1000. Large group competition.
That's the only thing I can think of. They had a large boat of women who did the UConn Quest. I'm sure it was the UConn Quest.
Yeah.
And it was all breast cancer survivors in the boat that did that. But, it just seems to be dragon boats. It's got to be what it is because there's so many of you can go into the boat and support each other, that sort of thing. So it's really good to see that and this continuing on for 25 years. I say we make sure we go to that.
Yes, absolutely.
Go check
it out. Registration is closed this week. If you want to race in it. But again, it's on June 13th at Del Crary Park in Peterborough, Ontario.
I thought it said it opens. Registration opens.
25th anniversary takes place Saturday, June 13th at Del Crary Park.
Yeah, but registration for team opens.
Oh, it opens on February 25th.
Yeah.
Okay, I thought it closed.
No, it opens on the 25th.
Go.
So you got
lots of room, lots of time.
Yeah. So put your team together, get yourself a boat, and get cracking. We got plenty of time. We're not even close to an hour yet. Plenty of time. So long before women-only adventure travel became a category, which has become very popular over the last number of years, Sherry Griffith was loading rafts in Moab, building a business that made space for women in a landscape long dominated by men, doing it quietly, stubbornly, and on her own terms. Sherry Griffith River Expeditions got its start in 1981. Set against Utah's Red Rock Country, town's population swells seasonally as more than 3 million visitors arrive each year to raft rivers, hike canyons, and play outside.
That's a lot of people.
Right?
That's a lot of traffic going into that area.
I would say so. April 2013 edition of Paddling Life, Griffith, then 60, described her motivation plainly. I fell in love with taking people into the backcountry. I had two options. Face a huge debt to go to vet school or get serious about the business. History tells you what happened. She expressed no regrets. What a life, Griffith wrote. It was a struggle in the early days and still is. There's very little profit and not a whole lot of inventory, but it's so rewarding. Jose Tejada, the current owner of Sherry Griffith Expeditions, met Griffith in 1982, shortly after the so-called Black Sunday collapse of Western Colorado. That year, Exxon abruptly shut down the Colony oil shale project near Parachute, wiping out roughly 2,000 jobs, forcing as many as 15,000 people to leave the area.
Oh, that hit the area hard.
That was like one massive, like, big employer.
Mm-hmm.
All those oil companies shut down at the same time, Tejada says. Massive unemployment, our house plummeted in value, and we were underwater right away. After he was laid off, his family headed for Moab, where his wife landed a job managing a Pizza Hut. He had some outdoor recreation experience from college and had rafted Colorado's Cache La Poudre River several times. He went knocking on the doors at river companies around Moab. The only person who would hire me was Sherry Griffith, he said, noting that his daily commute by bike with two kids in tow didn't faze her. Their partnership stood out at the time. We were two outcasts. She was the only woman outfitter. I was the only person of color. So off we went like peas in a pod. In the early 2000s, luxury travel company Abercrombie and Kent acquired Sherry Griffith Expeditions. North American branch later filed for bankruptcy. When Griffith regained ownership, Tejada's oldest son, Arlo, one of the two children once pulled behind that bicycle, had graduated from college. As a little kid, he always told Sherry he would take over her business, Tejada said. When the opportunity finally arrived, Arlo lacked the financial means to do it alone. He drafted a business plan, asked his father to partner with him, and Tejada agreed, unaware of the turbulence ahead. Unfortunately, Arlo passed away from Hodgkin's lymphoma. He fought it for 4 years, constantly going to the hospital. It was really tough. Arlo's death in 2014 left Tejada in charge of the business that had given him his start in Moab decades earlier, while carrying the weight of multiple personal losses that deepened his bond with Griffith. Sherry and I are quite close, he says. Her mom was like my mom. Sherry's brother died of cancer as well back in those early days. He was one of my good friends. According to National Geographic, women are reshaping the way we travel, offering everything from safety to sisterhood. All female travel is on the rise. Well, even that and women's businesses, yeah. I mean, like, look at Tori and her paddle like a girl, right? The getting women out there has become such a massive thing over the last 10 years. One of the things Sherry did different was food. Back in the day, it was all men, canned goods, Dinty Moore stew, that kind of thing. She made it so women would be more comfortable. We had chairs. We did all the dishes. The company's trips emphasized comfort without softening the adventure, creating space for camaraderie, ease and reflection alongside physical challenge. Tejada, now 74, hopes to retire soon.
Yeah, I hope so.
When the time comes, there's no one he would rather see take over ownership than longtime employees Crystal Johnson and Brenda Milligan. Johnson oversees reservations while Milligan manages operations. Both wear multiple hats and have spent years immersed in the daily rhythms of the business. Johnson said the three are working to finalize the transfer of ownership this year with the goal of preserving both Sherry Griffith's name and the vision behind it. That vision is rooted in the outdoors, Johnson said. There's something about being in the wild, away from judgment and expectations, that allow people to be themselves, and once you realize that, you realize it's okay.
And it is okay.
It's okay. That's pretty cool, though. Like, back in 81, she was a pioneer of getting this going.
Yeah.
You know, and that, and I mean, you know, it was a man's world, basically, you know, for lack of a better term.
And can you imagine at the outset of starting a outdoors business back in the day when they were few and far between, and also at the time when the industry was changing and they were shutting down all the mining and oil exploration. Mm-hmm. And suddenly you're in an area where a lot of people moved away from and you're trying to bring people in. And so you've created an industry to bring tourists back to the area or bring people into the area by tourism instead of because of the heavy industry that was going on. That's it would be a tough start back in the 80s.
Yep.
Huh. Very unique.
Glad it worked out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 74. He's hoping to retire. Well, he's had a good life.
Yes. Yes. Sounds like it.
You brought this one to me.
Did I send this one to you?
You sent this one to me. After 4 days lost in Oregon's rugged wilderness, missing rafter Gabriel Vaughn, 25, was found alive February 20th. He was last seen during a rafting trip on February 16th on the Illinois River in Oregon. According to Josephine County Sheriff's Office, his parents said that he was found miles downstream from where he was last seen. No other details have been released.
Mm-hmm.
The whole story, there's...
This one's a head-scratcher.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Gabe is a very passionate rafter, said his father, Henry. If he thinks there's any chance that he's going to be successful at something, the boy is going to do it. If he thinks the success is higher than failure, there's no chance he's backing out. He's all aboard. Gabriel Vaughn is what the river community would call a stout boater. He's traveled intense sections of turbulence, dropped waterfalls, rafted whitewater around the world, guided countless customers down some of America's most challenging commercially run rivers. That's why his disappearance was so bewildering to his family and friends. During the rafting trip, Henry says Gabriel was concerned about the upcoming rapids. Designated as a wild and scenic river, the Illinois has more than a dozen Class 5 rapids, and the group was sitting above a Class 5 section near a rapid called Green Wall. After a disagreement with his team, Gabriel jumped off his raft and swam to shore. According to his parents, from there, we don't know exactly how things progressed.
What is this team thinking? It's like, oh, what are you doing, buddy?
Right? And I'd be curious to know what the discussion was about.
Well, how long are you going to sit around and wait for him to come back? Right? You wait an hour, 2 hours? You can't wait forever. It's like, is he walking home?
Mm-hmm. What was the disagreement about?
I know, right?
It's at this point that Gabriel hiked out of the Chetco drainage area, a rugged, remote, and mountainous forest that partially lies within Oregon's Calmiopsis Wilderness. Gabriel left clues for search and rescue personnel as they scoured the area amidst bad weather. Along the route, Gabriel is believed to have taken authorities... Authorities found his paddle, then his helmet, and other gear at three separate locations. He was leaving breadcrumbs, says his dad, adding that Gabriel is an experienced outdoorsman and Eagle Scout. If he's out in the wilderness, he knows his chance of getting rescued increases if he leaves signs of where he's been and the direction he's going.
So peculiar.
This is a developing story.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot that they're not saying.
Yeah. There's,
so this is similar to the developing story of the guy who faked his own death and disappeared off to Europe.
Right?
So.
Yeah. What's a lot like, of what questions.
There's something happened here.
But, you know, there's all these leaving your groups and leaving people. And the one girl who died... she invited herself on a trip to the Grand Canyon.
Oh,
and
yes.
They ended up leaving her. She went her own way sort of thing, and mm-hmm. She ended up dying. Then there was the one we were talking about where the couple went up the mountain and weren't prepared properly. Storm came in, and around midnight she ended up feeling hypothermic.
Yep.
And
he tried to get her down. She told him,
go
she
ahead,
said,
go
no,
get help.
You need to leave and get help. Yeah. I can't go further.
And then he, 3 hours down, got help, 7 hours fighting the snowstorm for help to get to her, but she succumbed to hypothermia before
she just dragged her.
he's been charged
yes.
with five months and almost $16,000 fine.
Yeah. It's very, that one was peculiar too. Like,
yeah, there's an awful lot of questions that get
that one.
Well, their main question is, why didn't you leave her and go for help sooner?
Yes. Yeah. What happened? What's going on here?
Yeah. If there was some reason she couldn't get down, yeah. you should have left a lot earlier. So,
but this one yeah, here,
but this
like
one here,
something...
I want to know what the argument was about and what would possess you to, only thing then, I can think of is they were arguing about whether to do that rapid or not.
Yeah. Who knows what came up.
And he just did not feel
but
it.
What a position to put your teammates in. Like, right? So they're on the river and they're going, what do we do? Is he coming back?
Well, and that's the whole thing. Do you leave your teammates?
Yeah.
Or,
but you're not going to stay there for days on end. Right. You have to keep. You have to proceed, progress. And if they can't get ashore and track them down and drag them back and in, I don't know. It's very peculiar, and it was very unfair of him to leave his teammates in such a lurch because, like, they can continue, but like, you know, the morality of the situation is like, how long do we wait for this guy to come
right.
back? Is he coming back? Do we know if he's ever coming back? Like, it's really hard to know if, like, they paddle off and then he has a change of heart and comes back. It's like, oh, they abandoned me. No, you walked off.
Yeah.
So it's a tough situation.
That seems to be happening a lot over the last couple of years, situations like this.
Well, I think, so it's a combination. There's a lot more people out there doing this stuff. There's a lot more people realizing that what they're capable of and what they're not capable of. And there's also stories come out more because of social media. We mm-hmm. see more of it. It gets reported more. Like, you know, back in the day, maybe stuff like this would happen, but you'd only know about it locally because it hit the local papers, but it's not going to be international. It's not going to be hitting people in other countries or states or provinces or whatever. So it's a factor that comes up a lot with social media. It amplifies stories and creates more of a groundswell of information of stuff that's just random stuff that's going on.
Yeah, it just boggles me that your choice at the end of it all was to leave the boat.
I'm walking home. Right. It's like, what are you doing, dude?
I gotta go catch me an Uber. There'll be another raft through here soon.
So how long was he missing when they found
4 days.
4 days. So he spent 4 days. You wonder, did he have supplies? Like, obviously, he has lots of water to drink. But
well, he's had his paddle. His
yeah, he walked off. He carried his paddle and his helmet.
His life jacket.
Yeah. But did he have food? He had 4 days of.
And I think he had his.
Foraging.
Well, he would have had his dry suit on.
Yeah.
So, wouldn't be soaked.
Very peculiar.
Yeah. Weird. A developing story.
Yes.
We'll have to keep our eyes out for updates. To see what really happened.
The continuing story.
Continuing saga.
Yes. That's all I've got except for outdoor shows. They're starting to dwindle.
They are.
The next one on the list is the Quiet Adventure Symposium. Saturday, February 28th. Dun, dun, that's this weekend. 31st Annual Symposium, Michigan State University Farm Bureau Pavilion in Lansing, Michigan, 9 till 5:30, quietadventures.org. Check it out. Get there.
And don't forget the rabbit show next door.
The rabbit show. Check it all out. Ottawa Outdoor Adventure Travel Show, April 25th to 26th, Nepean, Ontario at the Nepean Sportsplex. Free admission and parking.
I don't know how they can do that, free admission and parking.
Well, they just let people drive in and park wherever they want. And then they open the door. People walk in. Nobody stops them. That's how they do it.
I really have to be more specific in the wording.
You need to get out more.
But to pay for the venue, like, is the venue being given to them for free? Right?
Well, or they make enough off the vendors.
I guess,
to pay
maybe.
For it.
Yeah.
You know, it all depends on what kind of, are you looking to make a profit?
Yeah, or you just...
Or are you looking just to break even?
Yeah.
Right? So. AdventureOttawa.ca for more information. And just like the Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show, there is a Calgary, Vancouver, and Montreal one. Vancouver one's this weekend. Vancouver Convention Center, February 28th to March 1st. Kevin Callan's going to be there.
Yes, I was just going to say
that. So if you're out the Vancouver way checking it out, Kevin Callan's going to be there.
Yeah.
Tell
he's going to do a talk.
Tell him Sean Rulli and Derek Spech from Paddling Adventures Radio sent you. Calgary, March 21st to 22nd, Stampede Park, BMO Center. Montreal, March 20th, 29th, Palais des Congrès. You can find out information on all three of these locations at outdooradventureshow.ca. The presentations at the Montreal one, by the way, all in French.
I can imagine they would be.
So that's probably why Kevin's not going to that one.
He's going to Calgary?
I don't think so. No. Okay. I didn't see him there. But yeah, I just saw him at the Vancouver one.
Yeah.
But the Montreal one, which is close. I mean, it's only a few hours from his house. You figure he might go to that. But if you got to give your presentation in French, something tells me he doesn't speak French. Bonjour. My name. He'll just say it all in like a French accent.
Yeah, yeah.
Hello. My name is Kevin. Welcome to my show. I talk canoeing. Could you imagine selling them on that?
No.
Yeah, this guy speaks French. Yeah, he's got an accent and everything. And then he just speaks English with a French accent. Somebody would lose their job, that's for sure. I'd pay to see that.
Yep, it would be interesting.
Yeah. Other than that, that's all I got.
Mm-hmm. I've got nothing to add.
Yeah, I got trips to look at. I've got a new bag to check out. See how much crap I can fit in it.
Heavily discounted vacation trips to Mexico right now.
Oh, that's right. Hang out with cartel members.
Yes.
Ex-cartel members. Yep. Yeah, see giant campfires, which really aren't campfires. yeah, there's a lot of stuff going down there right now.
Yeah, unfortunately. So,
as long as you stayed at the resort, though.
Yeah.
You'd think.
Paddled off the beach.
Because all I'm seeing is all these headlines from people from Edmonton, Calgary,
and
stuff like that. Yeah, saying, you know, here's what they're seeing down there and they're from their hotels and stuff. And, you know, I don't think the tourists are who they're after right now.
No. No, so, they're just they're kicking up a ruckus.
So as long as you're sitting in the swimming pool bar, drinking and drinking, or sitting on the beach,
should be relatively safe.
You should be safe. The big deal would be trying to get a plane in. But
yes,
if you could get a plane to fly over,
just drop you off,
grab your two suitcases, throw on a parachute.
Yeah.
And if you know how to parachute properly, you could land right at the front doorstep of your hotel.
Exactly.
Yes, Sean here for my, I believe I got a reservation.
Hung up in a coconut tree.
Right? Just hanging around.
I'm here to check in. Get me down.
Speaking of coconuts.
Mm-hmm.
Because you mentioned it, so we are speaking of it. I got two coconuts from the store.
Oh, yeah?
The other day. Put a couple of holes in each one to drain out all the coconut juice.
The milk. Did you drink
the water.
It? Did you kept it?
Oh, I always drink it. Yeah. And then took a hammer and beat the crap out of the coconuts because as one does. And then you peel all the inside off the shell part. Yep. And then I take that for snacks at work.
Oh, okay. There you go.
You got these big chunks of white stuff you're eating as people walking by going,
What are you eating?
Coconut. Coconut. I haven't done that in a couple of years.
Yeah, neither have I.
All the time.
I like the coconut in big chunks like that. I don't like shaved coconut on like cookies or cakes or whatever.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you not weird? A fan.
I am weird.
I knew there was something wrong with you. I love coconut.
If it's fresh, when you crack it open yourself, the meat is nice and tender still, it's very good.
Yeah. Or if you rip open the wrapper and beneath that chocolate is nice coconut,
as in the
Bounty bar.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good, too.
I don't like that.
I do. Or if you get a chocolate bowl of chocolate ice cream, and you put some coconut on top and some chocolate syrup. Oh, that's good, too. 1,001 ways to eat coconut.
Yeah.
Anyway, you got anything else?
Nothing.
Nothing. All right. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream all our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Blair FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. And I want to give a big thanks and shout out to all the people that came up to me at the show this weekend and all our listeners and said, congrats on your 10 years and
nice.
Love listening to your show. And where's Derek? And I said, he's
he's absent.
He's at work at the porn industry. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.